T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Haw, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Alex, I would like to know, what are the chances of getting, you know the rest of this question?
It's impossible.
Bryce Harper.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Okay. Let's move along.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score. Joe Madden's in town, and he did an event at the Union League Club, and that was Jim DeShays that wanted to move on. I would have preferred a follow-up question to that, David. And
well, I think it's
interesting to hear Joe.
Seems to be accepted that, okay, it's not going to happen, and it's impossible about Bryce Harper, and I think that we've heard all season, all winter long, about, you know, that's not a huge surprise. I think you do wonder as people get ready to maybe, you know, shift their attention a little bit toward the Cubs at the Cubs convention this weekend, is why is that such a foregone conclusion? Why did it become this thing that everybody just accepts? And I think that we've talked about how the dangers and the peril of going and investing, you know, as much as $300 million in one player and all these things that make sense. But I guess I'm still mildly surprised at how easy people have accepted the idea that the Cubs are not in on a player that has been rumored to be, you know, on their list and makes a lot of sense, has been trolling Cubs fans and is good friends with Chris Bryant.
They're on his list, right?
Yeah, yeah. Seems like he would be there for the taking, it's impossible.
Well, maybe he is there for the taking, David, but the taking is, you know, $300 million is a very expensive neighborhood, and you're making
Fair
decisions
enough.
On a lot of different players. And, you know, when you – look, they have invested huge money. It's just the timing doesn't work for them. The timing is such that it doesn't work. Now, if you went out and gave him whatever it is he's looking for, you know, then you start talking about, well, this pitcher's coming out of contract and he's coming out of contract. But – Jason Hayward is under contract, right? So
right.
That's a big dollar sign. That's a big number. And it's the same position that you would have for Bryce Harper. They, you know, the Cubs have told us all along that they are not going to make that move. And nobody believes
them. Nobody believes them.
Nobody believes them. And even after Joe said that, we get texters this morning that don't believe him.
So, what would have been your follow up? What follow up would you have asked Joe if you're sitting there and you say, okay, well, so and so from the audience has a question about Bryce Harper. He interrupts and he says, no, that's impossible. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, why can't it happen?
Right.
Why is it impossible?
That's the natural question,
isn't
right?
It?
You look around Wrigleyville. You look around what's going on in the neighborhood, around the ballpark, at the ballpark. You understand what's going on with that dynamic of maybe this weekend they're going to announce the new Cub station. Maybe that's going to be something that they announce at the Cub convention. Maybe that's the surprise that you typically have some big announcement. Why not?
Don't you want them to unroll something, though? And listen, they're going to rely upon the players they have to get better. The Cubs seem to be in a weird transition, even though they're not in transition.
Isn't that funny word to use for the team?
I'm just
that
saying.
That has his World Series window open at 95
no
victories.
No doubt about it. And I mean,
in transition.
But I think when you look at what they have, they do have enough, right? They do. Is Bryce Harper the guy that puts them over the top? I mean, it would help. Where do we hear from Theo at the end of the season that hitting is broken, right? So
yeah.
Joe's going to do more teaching, right? They got a new hitting instructor. They got
a new pitching coach.
But Joe's on a lame duck contract, but he's going to do more coaching.
Lame
than
duck
managing.
To you, free agent to him. Free agent year to him. Prove yourself.
Not arguing that it's
urgency has arrived.
It's not arguing that he will be a free agent. It's just, you know, and the fact that he's opening a restaurant is probably a good sign, unless he wants to get it in before before he leaves. I don't know.
Is it opening by May 1st?
But it is. It's nice to see. I thought that was good news to hear yesterday that he's doing that.
That was a positive development out of the, little session.
It shows a little confidence, doesn't it?
And we can talk to Tom Ricketts about this tomorrow at 7:40. He's scheduled to join the program, and we have a lot of questions for him. But I think a couple other little nuggets came out of the Joe Maddon appearance last night, the first time he kind of has talked in town since the end of the season. And, you know, he talked about, I'll take 95 wins. That should go a long way this year. I hated the DH and the NL, all those things. But he also said that the strength of this team could be the bullpen. The bullpen is going to be fine. And that surprised me a little bit, too, because Brandon Morrow, we know, had some offseason work done. He's not going to be potentially ready. You got rid of Jesse Chavez, a guy that Joe Maddon trusted really a lot down the stretch. How have they gotten better? How has their bullpen improved?
Yeah, here's the problem. They haven't gotten better. You know how they've gotten better? They've gotten better because in addition to Lester and Cole Hamels, presumably Yu Darvish will be back and pitching again. You know, I think it's amazing. They really had to kind of give up Drew Smyly, who they were going to, you know, unfurl this year. They had to let him go effectively to make sure they could keep Hamels, right? Isn't that kind of the way we look at it?
It's the way we viewed it, yeah.
And, you obviously got through arbitration. So, you know, you got Hendricks. I mean, you go over the list of players they're lining up, and that's a really impressive group. The thing that gives you a little bit of pause is that everybody that's chasing them also got a little bit better. You know, Paul Goldschmidt has been a Cubs killer, and he's with the Cardinals. Are the Cardinals the mystery team that's still in on one of these guys, one of the big free agents? And how would that reflect?
The Brewers have gotten better.
They've made moves.
The Cardinals.
The Reds. Cincinnati's gotten better.
They're rumored to be in on Corey Kluber.
But they've gotten better already. They've already made a big move. And you know what's interesting, David, is where's the tank team? I thought we had agreed that somebody was going to tank. Their division is tougher because they don't have anyone in it that is flat out trying to lose.
That's true, and I also would debate whether or not the bullpen is a strength of this team. I think starting pitching, if healthy, is a strength of this team. You mentioned Darvish. I mean, everything that you have seen about his offseason, he's active on social media. You see images of him throwing, and it's encouraging. They brought back Cole Hamels. That's a pretty good rotation, if healthy.
That's a great rotation.
I mean, that is going to be potentially the strength of this team, because that would have been my follow-up. How are you determining the bullpen being the strength of this team based on the fact that you've lost more than you've gained?
And your closer won't be back open the season, right? So it's a little bit disconcerting. 312-644-6767. Kevin's in Palatine. Hey, Kevin.
Morning, Kevin.
Hey, morning, guys. Very excited to hear that that Tom Ricketts is coming out of hiding and you're going to have him on tomorrow. So you can ask him from a diehard Cubs fan. I'm dying to know where where all the money is, because we pay a fortune to go there, and he owns the whole neighborhood. He got everything he wanted. So just wondering, what is this self-imposed austerity plan that the Cubs are on in the middle of their window?
You know, think about it, Kevin. If you think about it for a second, I think that when you look at what happened last year, it was the end of the free agency period where the Cubs jumped in on Yu Darvish. We didn't know that move was coming, and Jake had left, and you were waiting for some. And, you know, is it possible that they spent this year's money
last year?
And then
it's hard to believe they don't have any money, though.
It's not that they don't have money. It's that they don't want to get into the luxury tax. They don't want to get too buried.
For what we pay for tickets, he could jump in. Dip your toe in the water, big boy. We're in the middle of the window. This can be gone in 3 years. This is our window. This is not going to last for the next 20 years.
You know, here's the difference, and we'll talk to Tom about these things, but here's the difference. I think, you know, we look at the idea of luxury tax and of certain ceilings. Every team has a bottom line. Every team has amount of money that they're willing to put into the team. You know, so you're saying it should be, you should spend for anything. You should go get anybody at any time.
I think it's frustrating for fans to see how much prosperity the Cubs are enjoying and then hear that they're adhering to a budget. And I think everybody does have a budget, but Theo Epstein was on this station just a couple weeks ago talking about it. It's not the fear of the luxury tax that's dictating the Cubs' actions. It's the it's remembering that they do have a budget to follow. And what you're saying about the Yu Darvish expenditure probably applies more than people want to realize.
Was it a six-year deal?
6 years, $126 million.
Okay, and then in order to replace him, you had to make a deal for a guy making $20 million.
But Theo Epstein comes on and he says, in terms of the luxury tax, we're not governed by that. We're not guided by that. It's not going to dictate the way that we do business. And yet it's hard to ignore, you know, and ultimately does it matter whether or not they're restricted by the right. luxury tax or restricted by the budget. They're restricted.
Yeah,
and that's obvious. And that's what people don't want to accept.
Right.
Is that in this offseason where you have two 26-year-old players entering the primes of their careers,
one of whom wants to play here and has a dog named after your field.
Yeah.
That's the fact.
And you're out of it. And it's impossible. And it's not going to happen. Put it on a T-shirt. People don't want to hear it. They want to read it. They don't want to see it.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Meatloaf is awesome.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're going to talk to the great Dan Pompey in just a little bit. And obviously we've got the playoffs going on and the championship games in the offing and the offensive four best offenses in football.
Oh, that's a trend.
Getting ready to
that's a trend.
To compete. Trend,
gotta
trend's
follow
your friend.
It. Trend is your friend.
So I don't know if you were watching closely yesterday, but different information breaking that connects to the Bears, not about the Bears, but certainly about opponents. And one of those stories is what's going on in Green Bay, where, of course, Matt LaFleur is the new head coach. He's replaced Mike McCarthy. He's the he's been a play caller for 1 year, a guy who came from Sean McVay and went to the Titans and arguably didn't have a lot to work with, but they were 25th in yards last year, 27th in points scored under his tutelage as a first-time play caller. But he's brought in help. He's brought in Nathaniel Hackett, son of Buddy Hackett. Come on. Why do you have to be so wise guy-ish about everything? He brought in Paul Hackett's son, Nathaniel, who was the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville. I think maybe he was looking for a guy that had a worse offense than him.
Fired in Jacksonville.
27th in yards.
Right.
31st in points.
Right.
Okay.
So
you've got the brain trust from the 27th scoring offense and the 31st scoring offense. But
name only. It's name only.
Well, but the difference is that you've got Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
But I guess when I saw that, and again, you can be a wise guy, they're swinging for the fences. They're trying to really just knock it out of the park. And there's a lot of swing and miss possibility. It's either going to be the greatest thing you've ever seen, or it's going to be
with the Packers coaching staff.
Yes.
Well, okay, take yourself back a year ago, though, in Chicago, and you're talking about Matt Nagy.
Yeah.
The 40-year-old offensive coordinator for the Chiefs, who we were debating
eight
whether
games.
Or not actually called the plays or not. Yeah. And he hired an out-of-work former college head coach in Mark Helfrich, who has good ideas but was not coming off anything that was, you know, to speak of. And a year later, then they are, you know, the brain trust that is responsible in part for a 12-4 season. I understand why skepticism is appropriate in Green Bay. I'd wonder about everything they're doing. At the same time, you have Aaron Rodgers there, which makes you feel pretty good about whatever you do offensively. You know, they have the same sort of approach that the Bears took. They have a veteran defensive coordinator in Mike Pettine they trust.
Yep.
They have a young head coach who's going to call plays and you know, design a scheme that makes everybody go, wow. And they think that that's going to be the formula for success. I don't know that. You know, I would have a ton of confidence based on where the Bears are, based on where the Vikings are. In this division, you look at the coaching staffs, the way that they are constructed now, the head coaches and the combination with their coordinators, Bears have to feel pretty good about where they are.
Well, I mean, you know, you think about it. You got Cliff Kingsbury coming in as a head coach in Arizona because he's a hot, young offensive guy. The coaches in that division include the aforementioned Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, who has kind of been, you know, coach in waiting because his quarterback went down. And of course, you've got Pete Carroll, who's Super Bowl winner, right?
Pretty good.
So those are good coaches. And you look at the coaches in the Bears division now in the NFC North, and you've got Matt LaFleur, who is a first-time head coach, young guy.
Unknown.
Trying to copy something with – how good is he in front of the room?
Unknown.
It's unknown.
Nobody knows.
Okay.
He can be great. He can
Mike
be terrible.
Mike Zimmer, who is on the back end. I don't know. And you brought in Gary Kubiak to help Mike Zimmer. It's kind of weird.
Settle him down, or
I don't know
or,
what it is.
Steer him straight because I think he needs
he'll
both.
Run. He'll run the ball, which apparently the last coordinator wouldn't do.
I think Gary Kubiak. The hope there is that he is to Mike Zimmer what North Turner was before he was fired.
Well,
but I think that there has to be a steadying influence and some consistency to their game plans and some predictability.
And Matt Patricia is the Lions coach.
Well, that's a mess. I mean, it really. I think that I'm surprised.
He's the Lions coach because the general manager isn't, it's not his job to do research.
Apparently not.
just kidding.
I just don't know if you're a Lions fan, why you were hoping for.
Just kind of sit up and just like have a little respect.
I mean.
Well, you know what you were hoping for. You were hoping for Belichick. You were hoping for this guy is literally a rocket scientist and he worked for Belichick and you were hoping that he would come in. It seems like a mess. I'm not arguing that, but. Maybe it isn't. Maybe this will end up working out. Maybe he's going to be, he's a bright guy. Maybe he'll do better. Maybe the first year of him as a head coach was really a transition year. And instead of Matt Nagy coming in and allowing the defense to do their thing and building an offense, he came in and was clearing people out. He had to get – he's changing culture. If you're a Lions fan, that's what you have to hang your hat on.
Ask me a question professionally and I'll answer it for you.
But – the reality of the situation is that now you got Chuck Pagano coming in to run that side of the ball. You got Matt Nagy, who, again, you described him as similar to what they're doing in Green Bay. The huge difference there is that Matt Nagy didn't come in to work with Aaron Rodgers. He didn't come in to kind of, reinvent the wheel with in wheels and walls, buddy. They've been around a long time. He didn't come in to sort of – tutor a guy that already is his own offensive coordinator, already is kind of doing what he wants to do. He came in as a quarterback whisperer to create an offense around with a team that really had nothing offensively, just had a bunch of holes, no weapons, no. And they went out and spent a lot of money. They had a lot of money, and they spent all of it on weapons around the quarterback. And it was all about the quarterback until they made the trade for Khalil Mack. This is a completely different situation in Green Bay. You're bringing in a young guy, and you're hoping he has the gravitas to get control of the quarterback. And then you're bringing in another coordinator type that you're hoping can connect with these guys.
What are you arguing is better, though? I mean,
I'm arguing that Matt Nagy is in the best position in the NFC.
Well, he is now. He is now.
But I think he was in a good position when he came in.
Yeah, but I don't know that I would totally agree with that necessarily because I think that
he wasn't trying to win over the top player in maybe football.
He had the top player in football. I mean, I think I'd rather be a head coach who has no experience coming in and inheriting a quarterback that is as good as Aaron Rodgers is than coming into, having Mitch Trubisky and all the unknowns about him and all the unknowns about the offense. Now, Matt Nagy, all's well that ends well. But I think that if you talk about a year ago at this time, I don't know that Matt Nagy had any more reason for optimism than Matt LaFleur does because of what he didn't have. Because a year ago, they didn't have Allen Robinson at this point. They didn't have Taylor Gabriel yet. They didn't have Trey Burton.
That's what I'm saying. They did create an entire new offense.
They had
a defense, though. Green Bay, you come in. What do you have there? You have a quarterback. There is subpar talent at a lot of different positions, and you really need to.
But you have a quarterback.
But you do have a quarterback. But, David, that could be as much a problem for a young guy. It's not like you're going to come in and give your ideas and do you. Your job now is to get along with the quarterback. So you got two young offensive minds. These guys are all roughly the same age. Okay? They could have been what is he? 4 or 5 years older than the quarterback.
So but I still would rather inherit Aaron Rodgers than Mitch Trubisky.
I get it, but the reason that Matt Nagy was hired was to tutor Mitchell Trubisky,
sure.
to make him better,
yeah.
to bring in an offense that worked around him. The reason these guys are hired is, I don't know.
You're saying you're going to know more about Matt Nagy was allowed to prove himself as a coach more than Matt LaFleur will
yes.
be able to prove himself
yes.
as a coach, which I think is true, but I don't know that's always the desired path you want to take as a young coach, because I think I definitely would rather have a future Hall of Famer there to kind of
you
erase
know,
my mistakes.
We'll ask Dan Pompey about this, but you know, because he's going to join us next. But I guess what I'm saying, David, is you know, the idea of the young coach tutoring the young quarterback is what the McVay thing was. And that's what happened here in Chicago with Matt Nagy. And I think in Green Bay, it's a different deal.
Yeah.
And I wonder about what kind of gravitas a Matt LaFleur is going to have in front of the room and in front of the quarterback. And that to me is going to be an issue.
Dan Pompey with Mully and Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Dan Pompey, you read him in The Athletic, The Bleacher Report. His name is writ in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, fellas. Good to be with you today.
Well, you know, we've been talking it through a little bit and talking about the combination of teams here that are left and, you know, obviously the top four offenses, but also the top four seeds. And do we draw a conclusion? Do you have to have a top offense to be a top seed? Do you have to have a top offense to be alive in this year's Super Bowl?
I don't think so. I think it's more of a coincidence. I think these are also, for the most part, four really good teams. You know, I mean, the Saints have a really good defense that showed up big last week. You know, I think the Patriots defense has come on late and helped them win a lot of games. Chiefs less so on defense, obviously. Rams have been a little streaky on defense, but they've answered the bell when they've had to, I think. So, you know, it's still a complete game. And I think, it's still about how many different ways you could beat a team, but certainly, you know, you've got explosive offenses. Have been a factor all year long, and they're going to be a factor moving forward, not only in the next few weeks, but beyond that next year and the coming years.
Dan, we haven't talked to you since the Bears season-ending news conference the other day. What was your level of surprise that they opened the door to the possibility of signing Kareem Hunt, and how likely is it you think that Kareem Hunt plays in the NFL next year?
Well, you know, I think... I'm not surprised that they're interested in Kareem Hunt. I mean, if you were Matt Nagy, I think everyone in that position would be interested in him. Obviously, the decision to sign Kareem Hunt is not going to be just Matt Nagy's, though. It's going to be Ryan Pace's, and moreover, it's going to be an ownership decision that the Caskies have to sign off on. I do believe Kareem Hunt is going to be playing in the NFL at some point in the future. Next year, I'm not sure. I mean, we just really don't know how the whole thing is going to play out. And there's a lot of information we don't know. But, I mean, at some point, someone is going to feel comfortable enough to take a chance on him because he's got so much potential as a football player. And, you know, assuming that he doesn't step in any more messes and he is able to convince the people in charge that he's going to do the right thing moving forward, and this was an isolated incident. But, you know, we've seen this happen over and over again. I know the times are changing a little bit, but he certainly wouldn't be the first guy to be forgiven for something like this. I mean, he's got a guy on his team who had a domestic violence accusation against him in Tyreek Hill, and there are other guys across the league. So, you know, this was a little more stark because there's video, and that's, as we found out in the Ray Rice case, that's a little bit more of a damning situation when you have that. But I think, you know, he's young enough and he's got enough in front of him that this is probably something that he can overcome if he plays his cards the right way and he is genuine about making a change in his life.
We were laughing at the idea that you came out of that news conference believing that Kareem Hunt had a better chance of being a Bear than Cody Parkey.
you know,
it's interesting how that kind of got spun, but certainly, I thought it was good to see them very clear-eyed about Cody Parkey and not to try to downplay what had happened or try to say, Cody's still one of us and we're behind him. You know, all the cliches that you could say about something like that. I mean, I think it is very clear that they do need to move on, and it's bigger than just the one kick, but certainly the one kick was a part of it because, you know, that's going to leave a mark, not only on the team, but I think on the entire city. So that was good to hear.
The focus on the Hunt situation, I think, overshadowed the hiring of Chuck Pagano, which I think was a very good move. I know you're a supporter of Pagano and got to know him as well over the years, Dan. His status as defensive coordinator, I think, speaks for itself. He had success with the Ravens and certainly as a head coach with the Colts. But how do you feel about the Bears having five different defensive coaches now with a defense that was best in the league in terms of scoring? What effect, if any, do you think that'll have?
Yeah, it could, for sure. It depends on how different the coaches are from the ones who were here previously in terms of the techniques that they teach and what they stress and how they go about their day-to-day business. But the bottom line is you've got some really good football players there. And when you've got really good football players, you don't have to be the greatest position coach in history to bring out the best in them. The only thing that these coaches really have to do is not screw it up, because you've got something really good going. And really, I think the arrow is pointing up for the Bears defense. You still got a lot of young guys. You've got guys who have more potential than they played to last year. So, I think if I were a defensive coach, I'd love to come onto this team and be able to try to continue to bring out the best in a lot of these players, especially the young guys.
What do you make of what's going on in Green Bay, of Kobiak to Minnesota, of the changes that we've seen in the division?
I heard you guys talking a little bit earlier about, would you rather take over Green Bay with Rodgers or the Bears with Trubisky, as Nagy did last year. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch how the chemistry develops between Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers. And I think it would probably be naive to think that it's not going to be a little awkward because here you've got this guy who some say is the greatest quarterback in history, and you've got a coach who's going to come in who's never done what he's doing before, and he's in his age category, and he's going to try to tell this guy what to do or how to do it, or tell him this is what you're not doing the right way. I mean, it's interesting. It's a little bit like 2006 when Mike McCarthy came into Green Bay and Brett Favre was the longtime starter. And, Favre that season had one of the worst years of his NFL career. The Bears shut him out in the opener, and it kind of went downhill from there. But now the next year, Favre had a really good year under McCarthy, and it was his last year in Green Bay before moving on to the Jets and the Vikings. I think the Packers are going to be a little bit of a wild card this year. Bottom line is, though, they still need more talent if they're going to be able to be one of the best teams in the league. I think, more than anything with Green Bay, what happened is they really kind of eroded in terms of their roster, and that's what prevented them, as much as anything, from being at the top of the division this year. Vikings, I would expect a bounce back year. I remain surprised that they kind of fell off at the end of the year the way they did and weren't as strong as a lot of us thought they were going to be all season long. I think they're a very talented team, and I think, I think the coaching is good, and I think Kevin Stefanski is a good offensive mind who probably will bring out the best in Kirk Cousins, and it's not going to hurt to have Gary Kubiak there either.
Knowing Rodgers as well as you do, Dan, how coachable is he at this stage of his career, and could we be seeing the beginning of the end?
Well, I think he's still got a lot of football, good football in front of him, because I think you know, physically, he's there, and certainly he's. We've seen guys his age, great players at his age, take their game even really to another level. So I wouldn't expect for him to fall off that way. I think it's more a matter of you know, finding the right comfort level with a new offense and with the players around him in order to continue to go where he wants to go. But you know, I think the big thing is how he's going to mix with LaFleur. Obviously, at the end, he and Mike McCarthy didn't mix the way they were mixing earlier in their careers. So that's important. You know, you look at all the great quarterbacks who are playing at a high level, who are established stars, and I think they all have great chemistry with their offensive coaches. You know, Brady and Josh McDaniels, and Brees and Sean Payton. You know, we saw Peyton Manning, you know, with Adam Gase at the end of his career. So, I mean, that's critical. And if it doesn't happen, then Aaron Rodgers probably won't play as well as a lot of people think he can play.
You think Kyler Murray's got NFL written on him, Dan?
You know, what we've seen in the last few years with guys like Russell Wilson and Baker Mayfield, I think this guy is going to have NFL written on him. Now, I don't know if he's going to be a success. He, you know, these other guys had a little bit more size than he had, but someone's going to take a chance on him. I mean, even Lamar Jackson is a guy you could point to as just an out-of-the-box quarterback who really doesn't fit the mold, but had some success in Baltimore this year. Of course, we don't know where he's going either, what kind of career he's going to have. But I think there's a willingness by some teams to embrace something that's different. And there's also, at that position, there's also a desperation with teams who just don't have answers at the quarterback position that have to have something. So, you know, I'd kind of be surprised if he were the first pick in the draft, but I think someone's gonna take a chance on him and see what happens.
All righty, Dan, thank you, buddy. Who you taking this weekend?
Dan.
Who you think's gonna win?
You know, I'm gonna go with the Patriots and the Saints.
Yeah.
I really I have a hard time betting against Tom Brady in a game like this. And I know that
Arctic Blast.
Chiefs have a lot going for him, but you know, I think they're turning on at the right time, and the Saints are going to be a really tough out at home, I think.
So, everyone thinks we suck.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Okay, guys. Take
That's Dan Pompey, The Athletic and Bleacher Report. Yeah.
Going with the experience over youth.
Well, when you think about Kansas City and the Arctic Blast and all that, doesn't that favor New England? Doesn't that favor the slower team as opposed to the speed-based team? Doesn't that, you know, kind of favor –
I think anything at this level of the playoffs favors New England and Tom Brady just because of their experience. They've been there before.
Yeah.
It's too familiar.
It's a fair point. And playing at home, if that game was in L.A., I might feel different about it, but I'm not even – I don't know how I feel about L.A. I think
– In a big game in that atmosphere, I trust Drew Brees more than I do Jared Goff, and I think it'll come down to the quarterbacks.
All righty. It's a couple of veteran quarterbacks in that one. We'll be talking about it, heading up to it, and we're going to take a moment here. We'll be getting into some baseball. We'll talk about what's going on with the Manny Machado thing. We're going to try to figure out if indeed this is going to get done and if it's going to get done for the White Sox. Mullion on the Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.